and we'll begin the workshop. Tonight we have SEPA CEO Robert Stephan. Welcome.
Excellent. Thank you.
And you're going to present some information on SEPA.
Yes, absolutely. I've been here. I like to come at least once a year and give an update to the community on what SEPA is up to, usually the past, present, and the future. So I want to start with, first of all, thank you for introduction, Robert Stephan, CEO for Southeast Alaska Power Agency. I'm also a board member for the Alaska Energy Authority, the secretary for the Alaska Power Association, and I'm on the Government Affairs Committee. I'm a, you know, I do this during the week, and then on the weekends I'm a fisherman, but that's for fun. Anyways, I gave you guys a 5-year strategic plan. This is something SEPA developed in 2024. It was really a result of a 2023 study that demonstrated our load was growing at a significant rate and we needed to do something about. So I'm going to go through what the plan is, where we are in that plan, and give you kind of a past, present, future, including a project that we did before that plan was developed. So if I may start.
Yeah.
All right. Excellent.
Also, you might as well, we got our SEPA chair in the room, Bob Lynn, who's also the Petersburg mayor, giving us the rock on sign. And you want to introduce Chris?
Yes, Chris is our electrical engineer for SEPA. We hired him a couple years ago, and he's been boots on the ground. He's actually the project manager for many of these projects. So he's got a lot of the in the weeds insight, if you will, on boots on the ground information.
Currently trying to convince his wife to move here in Wrangell. So we'll see. Dad and I sit on the SEPA board as well, along with Dave and David.
Excellent.
And we have land for sale.
And he was looking at a house that he said he would have bought, yeah, except for it's pending right now.
House is pending right now that I can look at when I was here. But you wait.
So let's see if this is going to work. Okay.
So, working for you.
I think so. There we go. All right. So I'm just going to go a little bit about SEPA initially, because let me see if I can move this out of the way. There. For some of you, you're going to know this stuff, and then for others, maybe not so much, but I'd like to just do like a 5-minute about SEPA starter. First of all, we service three communities, Ketchikan, Petersburg, and Wrangell. We do that by way of 100. And let's see if this is going to work. And we have two hydroelectric facilities. We all know Tidy Lake and Wrangell in Petersburg. We also have Swan Lake. So you can see it geographically here, how far apart all these. This is a very wide range here. 175 miles of transmission line that connects the Tidy and Swan Lake facilities to the communities. And 12 miles of submarine cables, because we know we're all on islands. With that, we generate approximately 200 plus gigawatt hours per year from those hydroelectric facilities. A couple fun facts is SEPA actually has the second largest electric transmission system in the state of Alaska, second to the rail belt. That's a fun fact to tell your reps and senators and anyone you can bend an ear for. Another fun fact is Tai is the third highest yield hydro in the state of Alaska behind Bradley Lake. A little bit about Swan. It has two generators, 24 megawatts, so two 12-megawatt generators. It produces, on average, 70,000 megawatt hours per year. The Swan Lake has dedicated outputs for Ketchikan. And Tidy Lake currently has two generators, also 24 megawatts. It could produce up to 130,000 megawatt hours, so a lot larger because it's a lot higher elevation, which means you get a lot more energy density out of that facility. The dedicated outputs from Tai are from Petersburg and Wrangell. But one thing that Tai has that Swan doesn't is it's got a 12 megawatt bolt-in upgrade capacity. So it's got a third bay, and that's a third turbine. That's potential for that project, and we'll talk about that here as we move into the 5-year plan. Go through the SEPA's mission. Our mission is to safely provide clean, reliable, low-cost wholesale power to the communities we serve. So you see in this kind of a power triangle or this mission triangle, reliables on one side, affordabilities on the other, and then obviously safety is our rock. We want our guys going home every night to their families. With that though, it becomes a challenge, or can become a challenge, because with reliability and affordability, we're in a tug of war. For example, I could make the SEPA system super, super affordable by doubling the transmission system, doubling up our hydroelectric facilities, and just make it really, really reliable. But that would be super expensive. We could also go the other route and make it super affordable, and that is the do-nothing route, where we invest in nothing, we don't maintain anything. And some utilities have done that in Alaska, and they've failed significantly with 25% rate increases overnight. SEPA has to balance that, the affordable reliability, and we do that in ways I'm going to talk about. So the question is, how do we do that? How do we keep balancing reliability and affordability? First of all, we start with our 4R plan. SEPA has a renewal, replacement, and risk reserve plan. It's a 30-year forward-looking plan on investing in our infrastructure so that we don't run to failure, because a lot of times costs, when you run to failure, costs are three times the amount to fix it. You got emergency contracts, you got contractors coming in, you got timelines that are too tight, and so costs go through the roof. So if you have a forward-looking plan and you invest in your infrastructure for future replacement, it really helps with cost. So the purpose of the 4R plan, as I mentioned, it's a 30-year forward-looking plan. It supports our planning and our budgeting process. It establishes a schedule for annual payments. So every year we make an annual payment, and we can budget accordingly. Instead of having a yo-yo effect, if you will, where 1 year you need $5 million for some infrastructure and another year you need one or you need 10, we have an annualized payment schedule, and we could set a wholesale power rate that reflects that investments, and then we can do our renewal and replacement accordingly. A couple other things the 4R plan does is it sets reserve targets. We have a self-insured risk fund. SEPA has $500 million in assets, and probably more if you were to look at today's dollars into replace those assets. We have to look at, we pay a lot in insurance to insure those assets in case of earthquakes or storms or anything of that nature. But some things that you just can't insure. Insurance companies, I mean, you can, but it would take all of our capital every year to get that insurance. So we've invested over time and built up a fund called the Self-Insured Risk Fund as part of the 4R plan, which is the risk reserve part of that plan, that replaces our highest cost asset for risk purposes. And in this case, the 4R plan looks at what's the total cost of the insurance versus what's the cost of an asset that's not insured. And in this case, we have a $13 million self-insured risk fund, and it's for the purposes of a submarine cable replacement to Petersburg or Wrangell. So that fund grows over time, and we reevaluate this 4R fund, a 4R plan every 5 years. And in fact, this year we're going to be doing a reevaluation of it. So the last time we did the 4R plan was in 2021. Here it is 26. So we're actually going through the process of updating this plan. So that's for renewal and replacement of existing assets. So what about new assets? New assets will be required for load growth. As I mentioned, in 2023, we did a load growth study because loads in 2022 were higher than we'd ever seen. And they were higher from 2018 to 2019, 19 to 20, 21, 22, and going forward. And really, the load growth study showed that there was a conversion happening, an electrification beneficial to the communities. That's why they call it beneficial electrification. But it is a load growth that we would have to invest new infrastructure in. So why are we seeing the load growth? As I mentioned, a lot of it has to do with the beneficial electrification. And the reason is because of the cost of energy. And we might have the cheapest electricity in the state of Alaska, but we have some of the highest costs of energy. And the reason being is because 70 to 80% of the residential energy costs is for heating our homes. In 2016, 72% of Southeast Alaskans heated their homes with fuel oil, diesel. That we know that diesel is super expensive. In 2023, that percentage dropped to 50%. So 22% of Southeast Alaskans converted from heating their homes with oil to heating their homes with electric, whether that be heat pumps, electric boilers, or whatever. But we saw that increase over that period of time. That's ramping up significantly, and as a rate as a function of the $38 million that Southeast Conference got for converting heat pumps. So SEPA has to look into that. From 2016 to 2023, that happened by just normal attrition. People saw the cost of oil, they saw the cost of electricity, and they just made the change. Instead of putting in another oil burner, they put in a heat pump. Looking at a cost comparison, for example, Anchorage, one therm of heat in Anchorage, which is 100,000 BTUs, for natural gas, it costs $1.06. But if you compare it at the Ketchikan, it's $3.24. So 1,000 BTUs at $4 a gallon or about $4.50 a gallon, you're looking at 130,000 BTUs per gallon. You do the math, $3.24, it's 305% higher than Anchorage. So we really are paying a lot more for energy than we are at Anchorage. And yet the rest of the state gets PCE, power cost equalization. And Southeast Alaskans do not get that because our energy costs are low. So we're getting penalized for having reasonable electricity. We're making the conversions to go to lower cost energy so that we can invest that in our communities. And yet we're getting penalized with not getting power cost equalization. So that's kind of a challenge, and it's a message that I've been sending to all our senators and representatives. I wrote testimony today to the Senate Finance Committee with that same message in mind, and it has to do with the Renewable Energy Fund. We can talk about that a little bit later. I want to go through the trend analysis. I talked about the load growth. I wanted to show it to you in numbers. Currently, you see in 2022, this is a year of the life in SEPA. We have a chart here that shows you by month, January through December. The blue is what we provided in megawatt hours output from our hydro facilities. And the orange is how much we spilled. See, in 2022, for example, and this is typical of many years, that throughout the year, we output just fine. And then we, towards the end of the year, the snows ran off, it's melted, and rains start to pick up, and we start spilling energy. The challenge is why, you know, if we're spilling energy, should we be burning diesel in our community? Should we be burning diesel if we're wasting water out the top? The answer is, are we? Yeah, we are. In 2022, if you look at the capacity and diesel, we spilt in October, September, October, November, and we burnt diesel in November, December, and January. So the energy we spilled is because the reason why we had to burn diesel is because we couldn't provide the horsepower, the peak capacity outputs to meet the community's needs, even though we had the water to do it. So that's why the five-year strategic plan, the number one thing you'll see in that book you have there is the Southeast Alaska Grid Resiliency Project. It's strategic in name, AKA the Tyether TERP. It is adding 12 megawatts of capacity to our system. And what that'll do is that'll bridge the gap between what we're burning diesel and utilizing the fuel we have in the lakes. So what can SEPA do? As I mentioned, we have the five-year strategic plan you have in front of you there. Really in that plan, it dials down into three things. It's an increase in capacity, megawatts, like we mentioned, so we can meet those energy needs in the winter, an increase in total energy, so megawatt hours, so we add more energy to the system, and then an increase in delivery, because if we have more horsepower at Tyee, but we can't deliver it to the community because the transformer in Wrangell is too small, then really we're not getting all the way there. So that's really the big overarching picture of what the five-year plan is doing. We're doing that in a couple different ways, but a lot of it has to do with financial assistance from grants and tax credits. We've got grants from Department of Energy, Alaska Energy Authority. We've got dialed in on how to get tax credits from the IRS, even though we're a nonprofit. The IRS tax code 48E states that nonprofit agencies can receive direct pay for investment in their infrastructure, because it wasn't fair for municipalities and co-ops when private entities were getting tax credits and we were getting penalized for being a nonprofit and with the cheapest, on average, the cheapest energy in the United States. So going back to the past a little bit, it's outside of the five-year plan, but it was kind of the start of trying to add energy capacity to the system. So this spillway used to be where my cursor is here. From an old elevation of 330 feet above sea level to an elevation of 347 feet, there's a 2-foot freeboard requirement. So adding a total 15 feet of more storage to Swan Lake means that we have 15 more feet of battery capacity. So if we add any more energy in the system anywhere else, we can store that at Swan Lake. So far, that project has actually produced approximately 12 gigawatt hours per year in saving the storage instead of, because we didn't spill it at 330 feet. We were able to save that water all the way up to 345 feet. And that's been about $1 million a year of revenues over the course of the year. And so far, with a 10-year ROI, we're about already have a return on our investment. Looking at the Seeger project, this is the Tai'i third turbine. As I mentioned, Tai'i was built with provisions for another generator, the Tai'i third turbine. You see unit one, unit two, and over here is a skeleton bay where unit three is. This project would increase the horsepower by 50% at Tai'i and our total horsepower on the SEPA system by 25%. It would increase contingency. In the summertime, when we're doing outages and things, we'll have another generator that is sitting there that we can stand by. And if we have different maintenance requirements, we have contingency to be able to meet the loads of the communities. And it increases resiliency because the more spinning inertia we have on the system, the stiffer the system is, and the more a tree strike on one of our lines is not going to cause a power outage. Currently, that project, Chris is project manager on it, but it's in manufacturing right now. The electrical components are being manufactured. The steel's being rolled out for the turbine. The transformer's being wound and manufactured right now. So this is currently full steam ahead. The completion date is estimated to be the end of 2027. Phase two is, as I mentioned, would be the delivery. So once we were able to produce it, we got to be able to deliver it. That's substations. Petersburg has a capacity for about a 50% increase in loads. However, Wrangell is out of capacity. In 2022, we ran the transformer to about 115%. It is rated for that for a certain period of time, but you want temperatures to be, ideal for that because loads equal heat. So Wrangell is out of capacity. Ketchikan is out of capacity as well. We continuously run up to 100% capacity in Ketchikan. Adding delivery, this is called the Southeast Alaska Delivery Resiliency Project. Adding these substations in Petersburg or in Ketchikan and Wrangell would increase contingency as well. So Ketchikan has been 100% designed. We're looking right now, we got a $4.5 million grant from Alaska Energy Authority through the Department of Energy to install their substation. So we're getting ready to go out on the street for procurement of a transformer, which is a long lead time item, takes about 2 years. Wrangell currently, we have the design team in town. You might see some SEPA rigs running around looking at with the recent development of the mill site. We're looking at how to hit two birds with one stone, provide the power needed for the mill site, but also provide the increased capacity the community needs. So right now we're boots on the ground looking into that. And hopefully in the next 6 months, we'll know exactly what load the mill site needs. We'll have a better idea what the community needs for load and what the growth is happening. We'll go out and we'll finish up the design and then go out for bid. That's where we are with the Southeast Alaska Delivery Resiliency. And then finally, the Capacity Resiliency, and that is adding another project of some type, facility. So that is confidential. I'm just kidding. It is confidential, but I want to tell you what we have done. 2013, SEPA received a $3 million grant from Alaska Energy Authority to look at all the different energy, available energy sources in Southeast Alaska. So we did a hydro site investigation where we looked at over 100 electric hydro sites within 5 miles of our transmission line, because transmission is one of the highest costs for what we do. So the closer you are to it, the more reasonable the cost. We dialed it down and focused on the top 30 sites, and then performed a level one cost estimate on the top five. And the level one consists of LIDAR, consists of civil, all boots on the ground, penstock routing, really high level, getting that cost estimate down from a 30% plus or minus down to like a 5% plus or minus. We've done multiple wind studies across the region, in Wrangell and Petersburg and Ketchikan. In fact, we still have anemometers, I think, around. What we've found on the wind studies is that the wind is either too much or not enough. So we don't have that nice prevailing wind that you get in Kodiak or other places. We have a lot of wind, or we have no wind. And so the profile is not very good for wind, at least in the inside passage here. We studied geothermal with cost and return on investment numbers. We studied hydrokinetic, that's wave and tidal energy. Got a site. The problem with hydrokinetic that we found is there's not that big of a problem. The technology is still premature, but the biggest problem is the trying to get it licensed or trying to get it through the federal government, because you got a lot of fish concerns and water concerns and everything else, and there's not much out there. So you're on the bleeding edge of trying to put a hydro site in, and it really hasn't matured enough to go down that path. And then we studied solar. In 2024, we did two solar studies. We continue also to follow advancements in nuclear and other technologies, because we don't want to rule out micro nuclear. Technologies have changed where you're not a dangerous nuclear reactors anymore, where you have little beads and somebody can shoot this nuclear reactor with a gun and it's still safe to the communities. So we follow the technologies. We're not, at this point, I wouldn't say we're going down that path, but one of these on this, going back to the last slide where it says confidential, one of these technologies are on the short horizon that we're potentially going to be investing in here in the near future. And that's what I have.
You said 20 minutes. You nailed it.
Yeah.
Oh, I did say 20 minutes, didn't I?
That's good. Your last three marks. One of the questions I get from the community is, Wrangell, why can't you go out and generate your own power and sell it back to the community? Would you tell the audience why we can't do that?
Yes, absolutely. So in 1984, when the state of Alaska invested into four hydroelectric facilities, that's Tai, Swan Lake, Kodiak, in Kodiak, Terror Lake.
The four dam power pool.
They invested in all those and they set a wholesale power rate. And each one of the communities did the operations and maintenance of those facilities. They put in their operations and maintenance budget, and the state of Alaska invested, operated, and paid off the debt service. Functionally was paying off the debt service for those projects. In the late 90s, they started having discussion. Alaska wanted out of that business because it was so geographically diverse, and there was a lot of angst amongst the communities, especially being so far apart that they didn't have anything other than money that they fought over every year on whose project gets what. So the state wanted to get out, and that's what we called the vestiture. In the early 2000s, we divested, and they divested into what they called the four dam power pool. The four dam power pool is SEPA. SEPA sold off two of the projects later on in restructuring. But when the four dam power pool was created, there was a power sales agreement that was created amongst all four communities, all four projects, because there was a significant debt service that had to be paid. So by buying these big multi-million, I just said $500 million projects, that debt service needed to be paid, and the communities agreed under a power sales agreement to make those payments. As we went throughout the years, and SEPA sold off two of the facilities to Kodiak and to Copper Valley Electric, the power sales agreement was reduced in a way that was just between Petersburg, Ketchikan, and Wrangell, to pay off that debt service. So with that was an agreement between the communities that they would buy the wholesale power for the facilities at the cost of hundreds of millions of dollars at a wholesale power rate set by the communities, which is under the current formation of the board of directors, which is made up of our great mayors and council members. And so that power sales agreement is in the purpose of that agreement is twofold. One is so that that the agency can pay off their debt. And the other is that somebody doesn't come in here and say, hey, we want to buy your hydro electric power for more. We'll pay more than Wrangell will pay. All right. So if somebody came in, a Microsoft or an Amazon, they said, hey, we'll give you 10 cents a kilowatt for your power. We can't do that because we have a power sales agreement that says we have to sell our dedicated reserves to Wrangell and Petersburg and Ketchikan. So what that effectively does, it's a win-win for both the agency and for the communities. It prevents the agency from going under, going bankrupt because they don't have any loads. Because if one of the communities on the flip side had some fly-by-night that came in and said, hey, we're going to put in, we can get gas, natural gas here for really cheap right now. We're going to put in a natural gas plant and undersell SEPA, and then SEPA can't make the bills, that then SEPA would go bankrupt. And so it's a mutual benefit agreement, which does expire in 2033. So in the next couple of years, we're going to be in discussions again on how we move forward with that agreement going into the future. But that is the main reason why we're under contract in that way. It's a mutually beneficial contract.
And SEPA's kept the rate 6.8 cents per kilowatt hour. It just recently raised it to, 7.3 cents per kilowatt hour?
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah. So 6.8 cents was set in, and it was
in quite a few years.
20-something years, 20-plus years, we didn't raise the rates. What we've seen, and then we raised rates recently in 2021, and 22, and that was really a function of what we saw from inflation. There was a huge inflationary cost increase, and so our rates only increased by 5% or so over that, when we saw inflation on the order of 20 to 30%. But what we're seeing, and the reason why we're able to keep the energy costs so low, is because as inflationary costs have been going up, our outputs have been going up. So the communities are using more energy. We're able to sell more energy and offset the inflationary costs. I'd like to see that continue into the future. And I heard there's great things in Wrangell happening. And so potentially that will be something that we would continue to do in all three communities, see increased requirements for load and offsetting increased inflationary costs.
Anybody else have questions? I know that Wrangell did not have a legacy a hydro or energy generation, but Petersburg and Ketchikan did. Can you tell us about that?
Yes. So when the power sales agreement was initially constructed under both AEA and when we moved to the Poor Dam Power Pool, there were legacy facilities because the communities had their own hydro. With that, the communities could utilize their hydro first before they bought power from AEA. It used to be AEA, and then Poor Dam Power Pool or SEPA. They could utilize their existing hydros first because they invested in them. So it makes sense. After they utilize that, then they would buy the remainder of their firm power requirements from SEPA to meet the rest of their needs. So Petersburg has a Crystal Lake facility. Ketchikan has a Silvis, a Beaver Falls, a Whitman, and a Ketchikan Lakes. In Ketchikan, the only one that's not legacy is Whitman, because the Whitman project was built after the power sales agreement was signed in 2009. The next iteration of it after we went from the Poor Dam Power Pool to SEPA. And so Whitman is subject to what we call a true up, because with Whitman coming online and not being in the stack, and the promise we had made to each other that if we did something else, that the debt service, you know, wouldn't be paid if you used your own resource. The Whitman trope is a function of when Whitman's online, you saw that spill, the spill goes up. So we spill more energy because we're not selling that energy. So there's a true up in place for Whitman, but all the other facilities are legacy hydro plants.
And you're on a calendar year budget. So when SEPA decides that they have to raise the wholesale rate, it hits us in wintertime, correct? The notice.
Okay, so yes, and yeah. It doesn't necessarily have to. The board has got full control over the power, the wholesale power rate, and when it kicks in. I'll give you an example. In 2021, we did our first iteration of the first rate increase, I think it was Wrangell was under Steve Prusunka at the time. He mentioned that it didn't align well with the budget here in Wrangell. So can we delay that increase 3 months or whatever it was? And the board met and they said, yes, that's fine. So that we are on a calendar year. We used to be on from June to June, and we moved to a calendar year because it made a lot more sense with the reporting requirements that we have. And auditing and all the other fun stuff. But yeah, the power sale, wholesale power rate is adopted by the board of directors and instituted at the time the board so wish or so chooses.
That was because of me. I had heartburn raising rates in winter. Assembly member Delbert.
Could you speak a little bit about the FERC license or renewal, whatever you guys are going through? I've seen public notice in the paper, but can you explain that a little?
Yeah, absolutely. So anytime you build especially a hydroelectric facility, but a lot of energy, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission of the United States of America is involved, FERC. When in 1984, when the projects were built, we had a license to operate. It was a 50-year license. Which means we can operate those facilities for 50 years, and then we would have to go through what they call a relicensing process. The reason they have this whole licensing in place in the first place is for public safety. That is the number one reason why you go through a FERC license. You've got projects that have failed and killed hundreds of thousands of people in the past. So they want to make sure that you have a facility that's holding back billions of tons of water behind it and communities downstream of it, that you're playing by the safest game you can play. And so Tai and Swan are about a year apart, and so as we go through that relicensing process, we have to bring up all the existing studies, we have to do new studies, we look at all kinds of things from environmental aspects, structural integrity of the facility, community benefits, all of those things are on the table. And we engage with many, many different agencies, Fish and Wildlife, OSHA. We engage with cultural resource communities, Forest Service. There's a ton of them. And so they all have an opportunity to make comment. So far, SEPA's facilities, I like to say, are like top notch. So our comments have been fairly good, been good comments, because I think mostly due to our 4R plan and our investment in the infrastructure that they are operating. If you walk into one of our facilities, you can eat off the floor. They're clean, they're maintained, they're reliable, and they're affordable. And so this process has so far been fairly smooth. But it is a long process, and we are at the whim of different agencies that can request different things. But we have powerful senators, Murkowski and Sullivan, or Murkowski is a champion of the FERC licensing process. And we're actually going through some different potential bills on the horizon on how to streamline it, because it's expensive. For Tai, it's $3 million. $3 million I can invest in something, but I got to pay for studies to get a license. So I think it's kind of ridiculous in part. I understand the safety aspect of it. But I also don't understand when you have a facility in remote Alaska and there's not a single soul that lives below it, why you have to spend $3 million to reevaluate it. So there's, you know, there's a nuance. I kind of go on both sides. You got to be able to play the game, if you will. But yeah, that's just a requirement of doing business. 2030 and 2031 are the, we've started already. Yeah, we're about $1 million into it already. Yep, the studies take a long time, especially in Alaska, when you have such a small study window, and especially if they want to study goats in an adjacent basin, I'm not happy about that.
You did have a FERC commissioner come to town though this last July, didn't you?
Yeah. So yeah, we FERC commissioner Julie, I can't remember her last, but she came in. She met with a lot of Alaskans up there in Anchorage, and then she actually came down to Southeast, and we gave her a tour of Swan Lake and showed her around the facility, and really demonstrated to her that our projects are not like every other projects in the United States. So, you know, I don't like to have the same eggs in a different basket here, but these projects aren't the same. They're remote. And we invest a lot in them because this is our life and blood and our bloodlines. So she saw it firsthand. I think that helps. I'll be in Washington, D.C. next week, and I'll be meeting with the chair, FERC Chair Commissioner Sweat. And so if you have any comments or questions you want me to ask her, I'd be glad to do it, because Sullivan was able to, when she got vetted through the Trump administration, Sullivan got to sit down with her. And some of his questions came directly to SEPA.
Are there some of the questions at all?
And when you when SEPA does maintenance, you have a 10-day window, but you try to always undercut that window, correct?
As quick as we can. Yeah. The faster we can get those units back online, the less diesel you guys have. And that's important to us. So we don't take our time. We get the work done as fast as we can. We put the 10-day window in there because stuff happens. You might get into a unit and find out you got to change the brakes. And you're like, okay, I need that extra couple of days. But so far, we've been hitting 5 to 7 days. It's been kind of the average.
And in that 5 to 7 days, we spend about the community spends about $200,000 worth of diesel being burned and oil at the generation building. So, you know, we got future plans to maybe help offset that, and that'll be a good thing. But a lot of today's conversation that Robert and I had with the McMillan staff, David was there, and Chris was there. It's just about all the future load growth that we have as a result of a lot of economic development projects, whether that be at the mill property or the waterfront. So, you know, Jag Marine comes to town with 150 employees and a sinker lift that draws, you know, 2.5 megs or something like that. We want to be able to have a plan to address that day one. So a lot of the discussion today was around the switchyard upgrades, but also the Wrangell substation. So I think there'll be a lot more conversation while they're investigating and coming up with design specifications. And I know that David will be in tune with that. But David, why don't you tell them a little bit about what we have planned at the power generation building here?
Yeah, we talked about it a little bit before, but I mean, we got the number one unit. We're going to turn that into a standalone unit, and it'll go around the switchgear that's currently hooked up to. They'll have its own infinite switch gear, and we'll hook a transformer up outside. We'll have a high voltage. It'll transfer at 2470. That'll go directly into a switch gear out back, and that'll kind of be its own little workaround. So we're not overloading our switch gear inside. It's like rated 2000 amps, which is just over 8 megs. So that'll give us about 11 megs worth of capacity. So like right now in the winter, we're drawing about 9.5 this winter. You know, and I've heard reports of it getting up to about 10. So that'll give us the capability to actually pick up the town. We're having peak loads like that. So that'd be nice to kind of get a little more security in the system.
So when we walked out of the job together, since we've all been together, you know, we never had enough backup generation capacity to pick up the whole town. I don't know if the assemblies of the past were really aware of that. So this
they
is-
were. We were desperately aware of it.
Yeah. So this will-
But what we weren't aware was what shape our generators were in. Yeah, poor. And we've been chipping away and getting those all maintained, correct?
Yes, they're a lot better shape now than they have been along that.
Yeah.
We've center section overhauls over the last few years.
Starting a new rebuild next week.
Good.
So we'll be able to get all the output that the power plant actually has, and that'll be the result of those upgrades, and simultaneously working with SEPA for further grid resiliency. So I think that's pretty exciting. And, you know, I think the biggest question, Robert, I get from the community, and this is from folks that used to work out at TAI back in the day, is, oh, you know, SEPA's going to drain the lake because they're going to be running the third turbine all the time. So what would your response be to that?
Well, first of all, TAI has twice the capacity of SWAN, and we've seen that. We're already spilling. Last year, we spilled 48,000 megawatt hours. So that's almost Swan Lake. So we spend a lot of energy, but yet we still burn diesel. So I don't see, like, immediate, we're going to run out of water. But secondly, the power sales agreement states that the first right to the water in Tidy Lake is for Petersburg and Wrangell. So we have a contract, too. So not only do we not, I don't see us running out of water tomorrow, we also have a power sales agreement that says the capacity is dedicated to the communities of Petersburg and Wrangell.
Yep. And it's in our best interest to work with the incredible mayor Petersburg back there and maximize our use of the resource that we've been allocated. So obviously we want to grow loads organically, and things like the Jack Green Group coming into town does exactly that, and other opportunities over in Petersburg. We want to take advantage of the 24 megawatts we've been allocated. And obviously that's something we intend to want to keep in the next power sales agreement as well. So I know we're pretty lockstep in that, but you know, a lot of folks don't understand whatever we don't utilize, Ketchikan's got open rights to under the power sales agreement. And so I think that, you know, there's a lot of dead weight loss essentially, especially in the summertime. I don't know what Petersburg burns in the summertime on average, but we get down to the 3 megawatt range and burning nothing. And so if we could translate those into power sales due to underlying economic activity, we're in better shape for it. And so is SEPA.
It is. So the Swan TAI Intertie cost $100 million. And that Swan TAI Intertie is because TAI is at 130,000 megawatt hours of capacity, still spilling. And the communities were using like 40. And Ketchikan every year was burning diesel. So the state of Alaska invested in the STI. That was part of the reason why we had the restructuring in 2009, where SEPA went from the four dam power pool to the Southeast Alaska Power Agency and sold Kodiak their project, and sold Copper Valley Electric their project, and the state invested in the STI. That being said, with the STI, Ketchikan went from burning diesels not at $100,000 or $200,000 a year, but at like $3 million a year, to utilizing the additional dedicated capacity at a TAI, reducing that burn diesel cost and really reducing the energy cost in Ketchikan, paying for, in part, the investment in the STI, also putting our electric grid as the second largest transmission system in the state of Alaska, allowing us to expand in the future. When we're islanded, you're stuck. So there is no hydro facility on the island here. There's nothing you can do. You have to go off the island. And so you need a transmission system to do it. As you expand your transmission system, as SEPA did, that allowed us to look at 100 sites. That's what I just mentioned. We have a potential to tap 100 different electric facilities along the transmission system. We are utilizing 20% of our transmission system, 20%. The rest of the country, they're up there 90, 95, some of them 100%. So we have the most underutilized transmission system in the country, and the most potential as well. So there's a lot that we can do. We just need investment and we need agreement amongst the communities to do that.
And SEPA has built in fail safes in terms of lake levels, that you don't allow the lake to get below a certain level and keep drawing power from it.
Yes. Right? It's one of the most painful things I've gone through being at SEPA.
Yes.
I started in 2017 as in Chris's position. And a year after I started, Southeast Alaska went through a drought.
We remember.
I loved it. You know, only during the drought. After the drought, my life was miserable.
Yeah.
But during the drought, it was beautiful. Everybody had a good summer. We had aqua green water. I mean, it's really cool. And we had guide sales curves, but we had no limitation on what would happen and trigger curtailment to Ketchikan for the additional dedicated outputs from TAI. As a result of the drought, I went through and reevaluated the guide sales curves and developed a curtailment curve that would allow that the water in Tyee, the additional sales to Ketchikan would not impact the dedicated sales to Ketchikan, to Petersburg and Wrangell. And so that is the curtailment curve was developed as a result of the drought. And your predecessor, Steve Persunka, grilled me on the stand, if you will, about how I let it happen. And I went through all the studies and everything else. And it was like, at the end of the day, it was an act of God.
We've all seen Steve Persunka in that format, so I bet that was the sight to see.
Yes. I love Steve Persunka, though. He's motivating at times, and he was a great board member.
Bruce, Mike, you guys got any questions at all for Robert? You guys have been sitting there patiently.
Well, one of my questions, kind of, you guys have hit it on a little bit, was the 2018 drought issue that we had. We were only running two tournaments at the time because there was no third at the moment, and somehow we dropped the lake level down to a level where we were in dire straits, so to speak, on electricity opportunity, and trying to figure out how to make sure that doesn't happen again.
And that's where the curve came in, the curtailment curve. So increasing the horsepower at Tyee doesn't mean you go through more water. It just means when you need it in the winter months that you have the available horsepower to use it. So it'd be like having a truck with two trailers on it instead of one, and you're on the flats most of the time, but you need to go up a hill. The third turbine will get you over the hill. That's all. So most of the time you're still going to have the water in the tank, but you still have mechanism in place. And this is what was the result of the drought, is the guide sales curves now that have a curtailment aspect to it. That if we were to get to the same situation, regardless of three generators, two, and in that case, we were only running one because it was a summer, beautiful summer. Lows were really low. It's just there was no water. So you could run one generator or three generators, and if you have no water, you're still going to run out. And so the curtailment curve is in there in place so that we have a gap bridging mechanism that we can bridge water cycles and still maintain the dedicated outputs from the facility to Petersburg and Wrangell. That being said, it's not going to stop it. If we stop sales to Ketchikan and we have a two-year drought, you're still going to run out of water in Petersburg and Wrangell, even if we sold zero to Ketchikan. But that's not going to happen, in my opinion. But, you know, at the end of the day, the third generator won't change the water content in the lake.
Well, I'd just like to thank Robert, his staff. SEPA is a super lean machine. Chairman Lynn, he's done an exceptional job second year running as chair consecutively. We got such a great board this year, so it's exciting. Robert's done a great job getting, he's hard charged on a lot of, you know, legacy projects for SEPA, and that's pretty remarkable. So I'm excited to see us get the third turbine done and potential new generation projects and some of these substation upgrades, grid resiliency projects. So a lot of output out of SEPA, no pun intended. And Chris is fantastic. So it's been great to get to know Chris over the last couple of years. And you know, we're really lucky to have SEPA in the position we're in. Got a lot of snowpack too, and including today. So it should be going into a pretty good year.
Our lakes are full. We spilled in January. That's very, very rare. In fact, I think this year we had the highest lake levels we've had on at least SEPA's record. So we're looking good for going into 2026. We got very full lakes. Snowpack's not as great as it could be, but the thing about the snowpack and water in the lake is snow, when you have 36 miles of drainage basin and you have snow, there's a thing called sublimation, and that's where you get precipitation from snow where it doesn't actually turn into water, it goes straight to air vapor. When it's in the lake, that 36,000 or 36 square miles is condensed to 500 acres. And your precipitation is minimized considerably. So we actually get more water out of the precipitation, or more energy out of the precipitation, if we have it in the form of water in the lake versus snow on the mountain. So I think this year we're looking really good. We're going to make it just fine.
Anybody else?
I just appreciate SEPA keeping the wholesale rates minimally low and always looking towards the future.
I want to say they're not artificially low either. So, and that's a key, right? Because a lot of times people will keep their rates artificially low with bird maintenance, and we're not doing that. But what we are doing is seeing growth, and so we promote load growth so that inflationary costs can meet growth and sales.
I appreciate the public engagement out of Robert. I think we can anticipate, well, it depends on a Thursday special meeting, but there might be some things that are confidential that are no longer confidential after that. And we might have further public engagement here in Wrangell on some stuff. And we're excited to maybe bring that forward.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you know what Wrangell has got planned for its her future.
Ah, I saw it today. I've seen it a few different times. And I think
it's need more power, Robert.
I think it's incredible, and I like it. I wish, you know, I like to see everybody do that, because, like I said, we're only utilizing 20% of our transmission line. I still got to cut the same trees. And so it's still the same maintenance cost.
Yeah.
But we're only utilizing 20% of it, and that 25% of our annual cost is for the transmission line, for the Tyee line to Wrangell, for the Swan line, Ketchikan. So it would be nice to utilize more of it.
Good.
Thank you, Robert.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys.